Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Cancer does not discriminate. And I've really, you know, that's really impacted me since I had a friend here in San Diego who died last year at 27 from stage 4 lung cancer. And she was obviously very young and in very good health. So it does not discriminate.
On this week's episode with Tori Campbell, I speak to her about her breast cancer diagnosis and what that did for her and how she chose to approach treatment and her life afterwards. I think you'll find parts of this conversation really enlightening and interesting, but also I hope that it inspires you to choose the direction that makes the most sense for you in whatever you're going through. So without further ado, here's this week's episode with Tori Campbell. I'm Matt Gilhooly, and this is The Life Shift, candid conversations about the pivotal moments that have changed lives forever. Hello, my friends. Welcome to the Life Shift podcast. I am here with soon to be a new friend, Tori. I think we're going to be friends after this.
Absolutely.
And Tori and I are recently connected. I would say last week. So at this point, when you're listening to this, we're here in season 2. She's early on in the season. And so by now, we'll be long friends.
Absolutely.
All right. So where are you joining us from today?
So I reside in San Diego. I live in a beach community called Ocean Beach. So to my right, if I were to switch or to turn my laptop, I can see the ocean. So I can, I'm on a hill overlooking the ocean. It's not right there, but it's just 3 blocks down.
Do you get like a beautiful ocean breeze?
Yes, it's been really hot of late, but it recently just cooled off in the last day. So, but I'm from the east, so what I had the last few days was that's what you get out east all the time in the summer, or at least a good part of it. So,
I'm sitting in Orlando now, and curtains drawn. It's a nice, cool 95 out with 100% humidity. It's beautiful.
Yes, with air conditioning.
Air conditioning, but you know, I was trying to keep up. The air conditioner runs about 16 hours a day these days, which is just a blast. I love it. Anyway, so let's get into your story. So I appreciate that you reached out to me and you were like, hey, I'd love to share my story. And you have a story that I think a lot of people can relate to in some ways, right? But what you've done with that life shift that I'm not going to tell yet is probably going to be the most inspiring piece, because my original mission, or actually my current mission for the Life Shift podcast, is that each episode finds the ears that need to hear it the most at that moment in time. And I did it because as a kid, my mom died when I was 8, and I felt like the only thing that I needed at that time was to know that I wasn't the only 8-year-old or the only kid that had ever lost a parent, right? And so to have something, I wanted to create something where people could hear stories of people that are in a similar related experience and what they've done with it. So I appreciate you coming on and sharing this story with me.
Oh, don't, I'm honored to be here. Thank you so much.
So before we get to that pivotal moment that really changed everything for you, and it really did, just on that little bit that you told me, can you paint the picture of what your life was like, you know, leading up to that particular moment? Like, what were you doing
Sure.
day in and day out?
So it's maybe pertinent to backtrack even further. So not only was I born out of the country, I was born in Korea. And then at birth, I was abandoned. So I don't know my birth parents. And then flew to the States when I was still a baby, and then raised in Connecticut by a Caucasian couple. And that's where I lived the majority of my life. So from 8 months old through well, current day, except for a stint in Europe when I studied abroad, I was raised in Connecticut. And then where I was around this time where my life shift happened. So typical liberal arts college, and I didn't know what I wanted to do. So
do any of us?
Right. Some people do. Some people are like, I'm going to be a doctor. I'm going to be a lawyer. I can be an engineer. I'm good at that. You know, around that time obviously I didn't live at home. I think I moved out when I was 24, and I lived close to where my family was, maybe about 11, 12 miles. I had a decent job. It actually gave me very good experience to this day. I had great friends. I got into CrossFit when I was about 36, and I totally drank the Kool-Aid. You either love CrossFit or you hate it. And I loved it. And it was just, I made some amazing friends, some of whom are still close to me to this day. So I had my close-knit group of friends, and they weren't from high school or college. They were well into my adult life. And around that time, I was getting into weightlifting, which is the snatch and the clean and jerk. You will see that in the Olympics. And a month prior to my shift, I had already had an accident. I was competing in a meet, and I missed my last lift called the clean and jerk. So you get 3 attempts in one lift and 3 attempts in another. And on my 3rd attempt of my heaviest clean and jerk on the jerk, which is the overhead, I missed it. And I basically had a freak accident where I had open fracture on 2 of my fingers on my right hand. So I was just getting used to going to occupational therapy for my hand and rehabbing that. And then, so the shift came, I believe it was like mid-September of 2016, like 5 weeks after the weightlifting accident, I go to the unfun appointment that women have to go to every year. So, and she, you know, she's doing the exam. This is a woman I've known since I was a teenager. She said, "Ooh, you have a lump." I'm like, "Shit, I do." And it was on my left side, and it was not there a year prior. And had I done a self-exam, I would have found it. And it wasn't huge, but it was about 2 centimeters. I remember what it felt like. It felt like a marble. So I was in shock, not because I felt entitled, like I'm never going to get, you just don't think about it. Okay. I wasn't. And I was approaching 40, and I thought, oh, I'll have to get a mammogram after I turn 40. Well, this really instigated that. So I left with, I think they ordered a mammogram, so I had to get one. Mm-hmm. And then the mammogram, you know, obviously confirmed the mass, it confirmed its size, but the doctor said, look, I don't like how big it is. It's 2 centimeters. I'd like to refer you to a surgeon. So then I had to meet my surgeon who did a biopsy. And then she came back with, well, it's called atypia. The cells are not cancerous, but they're not normal. She said, I'd really recommend that we do a partial lumpectomy. So this was after September. This was going into October. So in October, I turned 40 of that year. So I had just turned 40. So the lumpectomy happened on November 4th. And on November, so maybe officially, I thought my life shift would be September, that day in September. Yeah. I had the appointment. But if the official DX or diagnosis came on November 10th, and a month after I turned 40, she called me, and I knew immediately it was shitty news. I could just hear she was very matter of fact, but I knew in her voice it wasn't good news. So,
and this is after they took out to examine.
They removed the entire mass. Mm-hmm. And they did a full biopsy on it, and it was cancerous. So I had to see her the next day. And this is kind of a funny story. So I'm sitting in the office waiting. I'm sitting in the waiting room, and the nurse comes in. They take all your vitals. my blood pressure was like 159 over like 100 and something. Like it was out the roof, but I didn't feel like, I just, you know, you're nervous.
That white coat. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's just, so she gave me, she just overviewed what happens next and what she wanted and what tests were coming next, because they did a lot of tests. So, and she was head of cancer studies at that hospital. So, you know, excellent care, very swift, even though my stage was a lower stage, it turned out to be a 1A. So I had 2 additional surgeries after that. This came in, like this was through the holidays. And then at 2017, I began treatment and I opted not to get chemo based on a variety of factors. And then I just had radiation. So I think I cleared radiation in May. And by that next, once I got my life back, because radiation entailed on my lunch break, driving 20 minutes, walking into a building, stripping, getting that stupid gown on, laying under a machine for like 20 minutes, running back into the room, changing back, driving back down to my office, and then somehow finding food. So, and I had to do that 5 days a week for 7 weeks. But I did get a break in the middle. I had a pre-planned trip to Cancun. They weren't really happy I was going down there. And they're like, no, you're going to be in the sun. And I looked at the nurse and I said, lady, I'm not going to Cancun to sit in the shade. And she just was like, all right then. So I probably was that, I was that patient. So once I cleared treatment, I really started, I can't explain how I processed it, because to me, it was just all blur.
Yeah. Let's go back to, I mean, maybe we can go back to a little bit of it, because I think it's interesting. You said a couple things and, you know, I'll jump on them. So there was one part where you said, you know, I'm going to turn 40. So I'm going to have to start doing X, Y, and Z, like the responsible things as a 40-year-old or something, you know. And you said you didn't feel like entitled, but how could this happen to me?
Yeah, I didn't ever think like, you just don't think, I just didn't, I was healthy. I was working out. I ate right. I'm human. I drank, but I still drink to this day. Like it's just something that wasn't on my radar because
you felt like you were doing all the right things.
Exactly. But cancer does not discriminate. And I've really, you know, that's really impacted me since. I had a friend here in San Diego who died last year at 27 from stage 4 lung cancer. And she was obviously very young and in very good health. So it does not discriminate. You think you're taught or you just on social media or in the news, like you should have X screenings at X age. Mm-hmm. Differs from men and women. But for women, the marker is 40. We had talked offline. I had done a prior podcast, and that whole Barbells for Boobs not-for-profit, that was started because a 26-year-old had a lump and she went to the doctor and they turned her away because they said she was too young. So that's the whole reason that was started, is because her best friend was like, this is unacceptable. How can you go get care? And they refuse you because of your age, which makes no sense, right?
Well, and I wonder too, if there's a piece of that, and pardon me if this is too much, but you don't have family history because you don't know your family too, right? And so it's kind of like out of sight, out of mind in a way, possibly.
Absolutely. And that's what the doctor, so one of her tests was I had to undergo genetic testing. And they used the samples they already took. So basically they ran pathology on the sample. And I came back and the woman in person, she said, look, we checked for any predispositions in your DNA that, like, for example, BRCA is a gene that's very common. That if you have, like, so if your family has cancer, if you have the BRCA gene, it really more or less means you have a higher percentage of higher likelihood of obtaining or getting the cancer. That was negative. Rare ones were negative. Middle of the road ones were negative. I had some genetic abnormalities, but I shouldn't have had cancer due to my family, who I don't know if they're both, I'm assuming one of them has to be Korean. Right. I don't know if they're both Korean, but so nothing in my family history would have shown up. So that made the process really easy because they'd ask me, like, tell me about your family history. And I said, this could be the easiest part of your job. Write down NA because it's not applicable. I don't know them. So they had nowhere to go with that.
Yeah. And I mean, I was just thinking, like, mentally, like, I feel like if I didn't, because, you know, my family, we have history of X, Y, and Z, right? So it's always like when my dad was diagnosed with something in his 40s, I was in my 20s and I was like, okay, well, that's on my radar now. Like, it's always going to be something that I'm forever going to check for. And so, you know, I think without knowing that. I mean, I think if I didn't have any of that knowledge, I probably would be like, oh, you know, I'll do the test when they're required of me.
It's ignorance is bliss, I guess. Like, just, I don't know, so I'm not going to go looking for stress that I don't need. So, you know, I don't want to sound ignorant, but you just, this happened to me and I had to address it, but otherwise I wouldn't have addressed it because I wasn't sick. I had no reason to think I was going to ever be a, you know, getting cancer. But since then I've read that, you know, if there's 8 women in a room, 1 in 8 women will get breast cancer in their lifetime, which is a staggering statistic.
Wow.
So if you lined up myself and 7 others, I was the one that got it. But everything was very swift and I had a total of 3 surgeries and then entered treatment in 2017, having cleared that in by mid-May. And then I was basically, I was cleared. I was done. So, and they do some more, not tests, but they say, I think the last surgery I had, they look at your margin. So they look at your tissue around where the mass was taken from, and those have to be clear or you're not going to proceed with your treatment. So they had done that. And then obviously radiation I skipped chemo. I didn't need it. I turned it down. And then radiation just was there to basically eradicate or kill anything that might've been residual. And this is, we're talking microscopic. It's just, you know, everything they could take out was taken out in terms of masses. So I actually had bilateral cancer that was discovered during treatment.
From the moment you were laying on the table in September, you were essentially clear by May the following year?
Yes, cleared of it. So going through, you know, additional tests were needed. She ordered an MRI and the MRI caught the fact that I had a mass on my other side that was, it would have been undetectable through a self-exam.
Oh, wow.
So it became bilateral. And then I had 2 more surgeries. Then those that quote, the margins I was talking about, those were clear tests. So then that I was able to enter treatment. And they did another test where my oncologist recommended chemotherapy because that would give me a lesser chance of a reoccurrence. And I said no, based on my unique factors. And then went through radiation and then I was done. So after that, when I got my life back, that's when I really was thinking, you know, I've off and on not been happy with, I wanted to live somewhere else. I always loved the West Coast but I'd always balk at it because it was such a big move and I really had no reason to move. I was happy with my friends and with my life. But but this put any question or doubt I had to shame. So I never, after that point, I never questioned it. It was just a completely different, like, okay, you're not married. You don't have children. You have every motivation and means to do this. So why not do it? Especially after what you went through. So by that fall, I moved. I tried to get a job, something lined up before I left, but it didn't work out. So I think I just visited once to just as a, wow, I haven't been to San Diego before. Then the second time was to scout it. And the third time was moving there.
So like your life was completely different a year after that first moment of, you know, and it's interesting to me, like my brain goes to these places in which, like, what if you had just like prolonged another year of that required age related testing, right? Like, what if, you know, right. Like, what if you had, or the other side, like, what if you had done a self-exam, you know, 6 months earlier?
A year prior. I could have done it prior. I probably would have caught it. You know, I had a physical symptom that now I know what it was, but it would have clued me into something. Basically a physical change on your breast or on the surface. And I had that, but I didn't know what it was. There could have been a lot of what ifs, but the but bottom line was that it did happen for no reason that anyone could ever tell me. My doctor didn't know. There's no family history with me being adopted.
Right.
No one can tell me why I got cancer at 40 from being seemingly healthy. So, but what it gave me was a completely different mindset, and it was a huge catalyst for something that I always kind of wanted, but really had no incentive to do it other than, oh, just changing. But that's a huge change to leave everything you know and move where you don't know anyone.
Did it give you a sense of mortality?
Oh, absolutely. You think about dying, even though I was a stage 1, I was a very low stage. And no, you do think about that. And so it to the point of you only get one. So take your best shot.
Right.
Or else you have this window to do it, especially if you have if you've just gone through something that could have killed you had it not been caught. So you get a second wind, if you want to call it that. And I wasn't depressed before any at all. I just thought, geez, you know, what's your excuse? It's yours. It's your own. Right. So that got me to, once I finally committed to, you know, going, and I was waiting to hear about a job and they never got back to me. And I said, what are you waiting for? So I sold I made it a goal to sell. I sold all my things in about 2 weeks.
I've done that.
Yeah. Raised money. I had to, I shipped my car. And the nice thing is you can pack your car as long as, you know, crap's not hanging out the window. So that was my move. I knew I would never bring any furniture I had because that was stupid. So I moved, my total cost of my move was probably about $1,400.
Across country. That's
cross country. Cheap. So, and I lived out of a suitcase or my duffel bag for a week because my car was getting shipped. And I had a room for a week from the only person I knew, and she was an acquaintance. So I got to go to the beach every day and not wear a lot of clothes just because it's shorts and tank tops. And I got out of New England before the snow started flying. So
you moved across country, $1,400. I've done that before. I don't know how much I spent because I was just like ready to go. I sold everything the same way. Like whatever fits in my car is coming with me, and I'll ship like 5 boxes. All right. So I want to actually go back to you when you were talking about getting that first like uh-oh, and you were laying on the table and she found a lump that you hadn't found yet. You said that was like your life shift, because that was really kind of that trigger point, mm-hmm. in which kind of everything came after, right? And then you changed. What was going through your head at that very moment?
Not how is this possible, but just like, well, obviously some expletives, like, oh, right. Shit. And yeah. Then you're just like another, I could, you know, just like more doctors. I was already knee deep in therapy for my hand. And then now I've got to squeeze in more docs. So I didn't have a choice. So I just had to do it. So I was working at this time full time. So I was just making extra time for appointments and still trying to go to my workouts. And those were classes. And then, oops, now I've got to squeeze in another set of appointments. So you just have to work within.
Isn't that funny? Of us,
yeah, it's weird.
Isn't that funny of Americans? Because I will consider you. I mean, you've lived in the States nearly your entire life. It's that we go to that. Like we're almost conditioned to like, okay, now it's part of the schedule. Now it's, you know, versus like, mm-hmm. this is serious. Like this is something that I didn't expect. Did you find it was easier for you to kind of compartmentalize and like go through the motions of getting everything done? Or did you find moments in which you really like lost it? Because I feel like I would.
No, I actually was pretty calm during the whole, mm-hmm. I mean, it's my temperament. I didn't go haywire, or I didn't, you know, I was certainly stressed about it, but I just tried to process it kind of rationally and just like, well, this is factual. I have to do this, and I have to start doing some homework now. And I have to go to work, and I have to still try to live my life the best I can, because I felt fine. I wasn't ever ill. You know, you don't.
No, you felt great.
You know, obviously, it was surgery.
Because you were CrossFitting, but besides the injury, but you were CrossFitting. And
I was still training. I just, obviously, with my right hand being out of commission, weightlifting was out of the question for a little bit. But I could still train and do other things. So I was just trying to make do with what you have. So a lot of it's adaptability, which I think I'm good at, is being... You know, you get something, a huge wrench thrown in your life. So, and it's, I get it. Like some people don't react as well because some people just can't process things as fast, and other people are more seamless about it. So I was able to be a little seamless about it and just say, okay, like this is what I have to make time for. This is now my focus. I don't want it to be, but I have to deal with it.
Yeah. Do you think that any of your upbringing, prepared you for that? Like had you had things? I mean, we don't have to talk about things, but I always think that, or part of me thinks that wasn't the first big thing that you had to face, and so therefore you were able to kind of line things up. I mean, and then the same, and we can jump on my story in the fact that because my mom died when I was a kid, and because of all the things that I had to do because she had died, I was well equipped when anyone else I was close to died.
Yeah, no, that's relative. So that gave you, in the worst way, it gave you experience and for future. Yeah, like skills.
I feel like, and I told people this, like when I was in my mid-30s, my grandmother, who kind of took over the role of mother and being super close to her when she was dying of lung cancer, and I was watching her, I was like a grief expert. Like I felt like I knew exactly what, because I learned what not to do because I did it wrong when my, well, quote unquote wrong in my head.
Well,
when
my mom died.
Right. Yeah. Well, it took 20 years. And that's how I was like, I don't want to do it that way again. Here's all the things I learned. And like when my grandmother died, everyone thought I was just going to fall apart because we were so close. But because I had those tools, I was able to process it like a champ. Like it was like, okay, this is what's next. And this is what's next. And that's where my question kind of stems from is like, had you, and you don't have to give me details, but had you had something in the past that you had to kind of approach in a similar sense?
Well, A, good on you for obviously being able to navigate in much later life, another close relative, you know, struggling with health. In my situation, and I don't mind talking about it because I'm really transparent about it, I came to have a very difficult relationship with my adoptive parents. They were great parents to me, but unfortunately as a couple had a lot of problems. And so by the time I had my accident, I had probably within 8 months to a year really decided to be estranged. So when I got cancer, I didn't tell them. So if your question is, did my parents prime me to handle it this way? I don't really think so, because my mother was very, very emotional, very sensitive, and she had a horrible temper and she was very volatile. So no, you can't be volatile, or I say volatile is more of a, like, implicates violence. And she was violent, but anyone can react any way they want about getting cancer. It's entirely someone's unique.
Oh, totally.
You know, but I'm just saying, for me, it didn't, my temperament is more like straight and narrow. And I didn't like it, but I didn't really have a choice but to try to just, you know, handle it and process it calmly. And I wasn't hysterical. I wasn't really upset. I just was kind of shell-shocked. So that kind of, I didn't really process a lot until probably well after it happened. Like, Jesus, like I can't believe I did all that. And here I am. But it, you know, as I spoke about, it was a huge silver lining to my life. But when I started it, I had no idea that that would be the result of getting cancer, is to finally be able to do something I wanted to do. I did not think about that. But a year later, I that was the change. So it was within a year. Yeah.
Which is pretty crazy. And forgive me for thinking back there, but I think sometimes I look to moments in my childhood or in my past, really, where someone was doing something the opposite of what I wanted to do. And so that's kind of like how I directed myself. So that's kind of probably just gave myself some therapy on that, of figuring out why things went the way they did. But, you know, it's interesting to me because you're right. Like, I tell people this, I think getting a diagnosis of cancer, I've never had it, thankfully. I think getting that you could probably equate it to someone losing someone or, you know, like some major thing. And no one can tell you how to respond to that.
No, it's entirely unique to the person. And it also has something to do with lead-in, like what led to the cancer. You know, some people just go for, like my friend here who died when she was the lung cancer young woman, she was also a crossfitter, and she thought she tore her calf muscle. So she finally went in to get a test. And after doing scans, it became clear very quickly that she had an extension of the lung cancer. She had blood clots in her legs, and that's what was causing her pain. So it became, no, you don't have a tear in your calf. You have something much more serious. But around the time of my shift, I had already made a big decision not to cut off ties with my parents. And I had no siblings. And then my second largest decision, or most important, was right after that, turning down chemo. And the third one was moving to California. And that all happened within probably 2 years.
It all came from facing your mortality, in a sense that, like, now it's time to, like, actually live and do the things that Tori wants to do.
Yes. So obviously 2 and 3 were more related to that. The parental decision was years in the making. That kind of showed itself to me, and I had no other choice but to slowly start stepping away because I can't change what my parents go through. And it was having a negative impact on me. So that decision was already made. But turning down chemo and moving to California were definitely sequential, one after the other.
And how do you find now that you're this newer version of you, what's the most interesting thing that's like the before version of you would find about current version? Like what's changed the most?
I think the reason I wanted to do this podcast, and I think your reasons for, you know, sharing your story and creating this whole podcast theme of your life shift is that someone could benefit from it. Someone could hear this and it resonates with them. And after I went through it, I really wanted to give back more and have an impact on others' lives. So obviously cancer is a huge topic, and I don't have a very arduous example. I was a low stage. It didn't kill me, but it brought me something very unique. Now I want to pay it forward and try to give back. So that was maybe not on my radar before this happened. You know, the newer version of me, the better version, the happier version, the version that I live here and pulling off what I did is trying to pay it back more.
Were you fairly open before? Were you very did you want to share stuff that was happening?
I don't have friends who I don't want anyone walking on eggshells around me. I'm pretty straightforward and pretty blunt. You know how I feel. So I'm pretty candid.
Were you always like that growing up?
Yes. Oh yes. Yep. Very, I was feisty and independent and determined. And so if anything, this gave me more chutzpah to, you know, just continue to be me, but even be, you know, in a wiser, you know, be a little bit smarter about it, but not rest on my laurels, you know, be that type of worker, work even harder, push even harder, because I really, when I moved here, it was honeymoon period. Then I was looking for work and I found some decent jobs, but I actually had to move to Texas quickly for 2 months. And I came back with even less money than I had the first time. And I really had to make that work. So yeah, you have to have a lot of drive and your ass is on the line, basically. I can't ask my parents for money. They didn't have any, but there was no safety net. So everything was on my shoulders.
Do you feel almost more of an obligation now to live your best life than you felt before?
Yes, I do. Absolutely.
I hear people talk about like living on borrowed time or things that kind of create bigger and better versions. It's like that marker in the sand, if you will. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that?
Yes, because I remember, you know, I think I definitely through something unpleasant became a better version of the person I already was. So I already was outgoing. I already was honest. I already was
enhanced.
Yeah. Better like version 2.0, like just, you know, a more thoughtful, diligent, tenacious, energized version of the prior person that lived in Connecticut. And I think back to my life now, and it almost seems surreal that I lived in Connecticut. Like my life there versus here.
What's so different?
Oh, just the, I mean, California, I mean, it's just.
I'm from Boston, so I get the New England. Oh. I get that New England feel.
I love the sunshine. I always liked laying out, and it's like you only get a window of like 3 months to do it in out east. So out here, it's like, it's not going to rain for another like month or two. And if it does, it's very quick. But there's sunshine. And just the culture of California. Like, I'm not a big pot smoker, but. Yeesh, like it's a thing out here. It's just I think it's more laid back. There's more culture here. I mean, when you move from a very small town of like 5,000 to the eighth largest city in the country, it's a bit of a change. So
I agree. I mean, I left Boston in the late 80s after my mom died and moved to Georgia, which was like,
oh wow,
culture shock for sure, because you know I'm like an 8-year-old with a Boston accent moving into this place with diversity and different southern accents. So I get that completely. Like, I can't imagine living in Boston now compared, I mean, I don't want to be in Florida, but there's California sounds like a great place to be, and that you're kind of living your best life out there now. And are you going, do you like talk to other people? are you in like kind of cancer groups?
No, or? Like I've worked with that nonprofit I mentioned, mm-hmm. but I haven't been able to talk with, I think I know the way you meant it, like a group in that sense. No, I could have if I wanted to, but I just wanted to keep it, you know, between, you know, among my friends, or, you know, I think I had a decent handle on it. Not that I'm perfect. I'm just saying that I was able to mentally process it my way. I didn't necessarily want to, I'm fine opening up about it, but I didn't need to open up about it in the sense of like, I needed help.
And well, I mean, in helping other people. So, I mean, you're on this podcast, so hopefully, you know, someone,
yeah.
I mean, hopefully nobody else ever gets cancer, but that's not realistic, right? So hopefully someone that faces, it might not even be cancer. It could be any medical diagnosis. It shouldn't take these moments to help us live right. The best life, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I felt the same. When my grandmother died, that's when my life changed. When my mom died, I mean, obviously that changed me,
yeah.
But I felt like I pulled a Tory when my grandmother died because she was like, you know, I wish I hadn't worried so much because all that matters is love in the end. And I was like, you know what?
Mm-hmm.
You're right. So yeah. Luckily I was mid-30s, so I was able to kind of turn things around. So I understand that kind of living for yourself, doing the things that you want to do. Whenever you made the decision related to your parents, do you feel like that was your kickoff point? Like that moment where you like kind of were like, you know what? This is for me now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I think that's a big start because because
that's a big step.
Yeah. And it was a very slow decision because I just started slowly stepping away, and then it got bad. Before that, it was shitty before. And that's when I started to think, well, I hate going over there. It's so awkward. My mother will, you know, get in my dad's case, and you know, there's depression there. So my father has depression, and that was a large part of it. Their marriage was terrible, and it burdened their marriage, and that's not his fault. I'm just being factual. It did, but my mother didn't cope with it well. And I didn't ask them to stay together as a couple. They should have divorced, but they got to an age where they became codependent. So being an only child, they were starting to affect my life negatively. So I'm in charge of my life. I have to hold myself accountable. So that's why I started distancing myself and ultimately saying, I have to cut the cord entirely. He had suffered from that. It started in his 40s, but he managed I think he always had anxiety because he didn't have a great childhood, and it reared its head when he was an adult. Then he was an attorney and they started to struggle financially. They were putting me through school. I went to a private high school. Then I went to a private college. So I think it was glad that, they were glad when I got out, when I did, or at least I finished school just in time when it was getting really bad. But the problem was exacerbated because my mother, the house that I grew up in, she also did as a child, and she bought that house from her father and she would not leave it. So when it became above their financial level to stay in the house, she refused to leave it. And then they always had no money, or at least they were raising me, putting me through school. And then he struggled because of his depression in his practice. So it just never got better. And she, for whatever reason, was very entitled, and that really burdened their marriage. And I don't to this. So if, they're aged now, they're well into their late 70s. If I'm their heir, which I should be, I don't want any part of that estate. I've already made decisions where if I'm contacted, I'm going to decline the estate. I don't want to be the executor of it. I'm not going to be handling the probate, because the last thing I want to do is go back to that house and clean it out, because it has a lot of terrible memories. So to this day, I probably have trauma with like loud noises. Like if I'm, let's say I go to a bar after I've had a long day of work, if there's someone playing that's like too loud, I get stressed out. If people, like if I watch movies where all they do is shout, or like TV shows, like Seinfeld to me is an example. A, I don't find it funny. B, all they do is when they make jokes is they shout at each other. I don't find it funny. And it's also kind of stressful because I have some trauma from yelling. And I'll be clear that all the yelling happened when I was older. It wasn't like I was a child. When I was a child, it was fine. It was ironically more in my adult life.
I think there's something to be said about making a seemingly hard decision, right? Because these people have been your parents or growing up, and then having to make that choice that your well-being is more important than any other pieces. And I, again, can relate to something similar, not parent-related, but family-related, in which there are portions of my family that I intentionally do not connect with because it's not healthy. And it's when you tell someone, I don't know if you've experienced this, but when you tell someone, they get like, why would you do that? And it's like, I don't have to explain that to you.
No,
but it is, it's a big thing and it takes a lot. And I'm thinking that part of your story kind of leads you into this, like, it was almost like that precursor to allowing yourself to just do whatever the hell you want to do.
Right. Cause I obviously as an adult, you can do whatever you want anyway, but if I had been in closer to them, would that have affected my decision? I don't think so. I don't think at all. I still would have gone. You don't need to be an adult and seek permission from your parents to do certain things when you're past a certain age. I mean, to me, that's 21. Like 21 over,
I think there are people listening that would disagree, because I think there's something about like getting that permission from a parent that's always given you the permission. I think it's interesting, but I applaud you for it. And I think it probably allowed you, by not telling them about your diagnosis, you could make all your own decisions mm-hmm. without the burden of someone else worrying, or
that would have added a dysfunctional stress to it, because I think my mother would have flown off the handle. And also I've received pushback, I think, just, and it's not unfair comments, but what I haven't mentioned yet is that when I decided to be estranged, I didn't go up to them and go, I'm never going to talk to you again. I didn't really tell them, because I think my father kind of knew, but I was trained where if they were having an argument and I said to my mom, just stop yelling, she would take that and turn right to my father and say, look what you're doing to my daughter and I, look what you're doing. So she took an emotion that I had just to stop arguing and she used it to get to my other parent. So I couldn't ever level with her and say, if you just stop being so violent or whatever, fill in the blank, right? So that's why I couldn't go to them and go to them as a couple or even individually and say, this is what I'm doing, because there's already strife. And I don't know if I wanted to be, cause additional turmoil. There was already enough turmoil. So that's been mentioned to me. That's kind of a cop out, but they're not the ones in my position. So.
Correct. Right. And it sounds like you're now, or you've always been in this position where you own your decisions, like even just the decision of not choosing the chemotherapy route or, moving across the country with no amazing job lined up or whatever it may be. You chose these things because you were led to them and that you felt that this was the next step for your life.
Indeed. You have to, if you have to commit to it. It's a hard thing to commit to a decision mentally, but once you do, you really have to try to be all in, because you don't want to set yourself up to fail within your power. So, and those are hard. Those are some of the hardest decisions I've ever had to make, but I was convinced for me, they were the right ones. I knew the chemo one, obviously the guy, the doctor, the oncologist is smarter. He probably had medical prowess to show me the results and say, I know for a fact you'd have less chance. I'm sure he was right, but that wasn't enough for me to justify basically putting toxins into my body so that I could still perhaps down the road get cancer.
Right.
No one can assure you like 100%. I get that. That's not what I was asking, but I was just, he was very respectful. He didn't agree with me, but he was respectful of my decision. And this was on a phone call. He called me to find out what I would do. And I said, well, after looking at my respective tests and my options and me as a person, and that I have a really good immune system, I'm going to choose to decline it. So.
Hey, and that's your decision too. I mean, I think sometimes society bullies us into it, whether it's actually doing it or not, and I commend you for having the ability to make your strong decisions based on your own, value that you put in yourself. Because I think I've made decisions, and I know a lot of people that have made decisions because that was what society was like. That's next for you. That's your
next decision. It's a more. It's a social more. It's you. No one should be pigeonholed into a decision that just because they should be because they're expected to follow a certain path. It's each person's path is their own.
Do you do this more now, post diagnosis and recovery, or you kind of? It's always been like my way or the highway.
No, like not with, I mean, at least things for me. Yeah. My way or the highway, but with people I care about, it's not that, I'm like, well, you're gonna listen to me and I'm right. I never approach, if my friends ask advice,
you should do that.
Yeah, you should do like, it's, I just say like, you should take, I'm not, what I'm saying is not right or wrong, but just if you're asking, all I ask is that you listen and you can extrapolate from it what you will that's relevant to your life. That's all I can offer you as a friend. Is my perspective and my 2 cents for what that's worth, and you can use it how you wish. But I would never just throw that on someone and say, "Oh, this is what you have to do." Like that's
no chemo for anyone,
right? Yeah, right.
That's a personal decision. Yeah, I mean, I you've said that you're a happier version of yourself. What's the biggest difference between California you and Connecticut you?
That's a good question. Just a different awareness of how I'm happy versus back in Connecticut. I was happy, like in quotation marks, but I would always come back to like this feeling of being unsettled. So I don't necessarily come back to that now. So, at least that's,
do you feel home?
It's starting to, I mean, it's tough. I have a friend base and I love when I come back here on a plane that I feel like I'm coming home, but obviously there are things like housing and jobs and relationships that take a while to foster. So I'm not going to, I would love to live in the studio forever, but I'm probably going to be, at some point not living in it forever. I've started to date someone pretty seriously here. So, hoping that becomes like someone I already spend a lot of time with this person, but just more of a, committed, living with him. So that's a big step, but I didn't even find that in Connecticut. I didn't meet that person back where in Connecticut. I've met him here.
Did you find a CrossFit there?
Here? No, I go to a gym that's similar, but they're not a CrossFit affiliate. So yeah, I have a great gym, close.
There's something to be said about a gym family.
Oh, absolutely. If people of like-minded, you know, you're all human. Like, you want to try to work out to be fit, but all these people party, like, or, you know, have their professionals or whatever walks of life they come from. We just try to be fit together and suffer, and then we have drinks sometimes. So,
no, I know you said the environment around you is carefree. Do you feel like you're more carefree?
No, I mean, I'm always me. I probably, you see all types here. Like, there's sometimes the way people dress, it never, like, nothing blows my hair back anymore living out here. So you see some interesting characters, especially living in like a little, you know, in a beach community too. And Ocean Beach is known as really laid back. It used to be this very special hippie beach community, and now it's kind of turning into like a lot of tourists are here, which is fine. But the homeless problem has gotten pretty crazy, and it's sad because it wasn't like this when I moved here almost 5 years ago. It's changed in that time because housing is out the roof.
The reason I asked about the carefree aspect is, you know, when you were originally kind of listing kind of the order of events that happened and kind of like what you had to do next and then what was next, it felt very like structured and kind of like it was just the next thing you had to do to achieve said goal.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if now that said goal has been achieved and you're kind of living even more authentically in the space that you want to, finding the things that you want to, creating that. That's why I asked if you feel like it's kind of just like, I can do whatever I want now. It's not like this regimented list of things to do.
Well, I think the only thing I'm still chasing is what I want to do for a career, like maybe not a pivot, but not just falling back on what my transferable skills are, really, really putting myself in a position to give back more and to make a living out of doing something that I enjoy more. But I think that's not way down the road where it's not even visible. I think there's light at the end of the tunnel now. But that's going to take some time because you have to still remain a functional, there are bills to pay human being. So,
yeah, wouldn't it be great if we could just do what we wanted to do all the time?
Yeah,
and get paid
and
for
get paid
it
for
and
it,
pay all our bills.
And some people get to do that, and that's extremely, you know, that's very fortunate. So,
yeah. Well, I think, you know, with all the things that you have accomplished thus far, I think you'll be able to create that for yourself. I don't know you very well, but I feel like that's what your story is telling me. I like to kind of wrap up these conversations with a question.
Sure.
Before I do that, I just want to let the listeners know that we had a couple technical issues. And so if you hear a couple glitches here and there, that's why. But before we wrap up this call, I like to ask if you could step into that room where 2016 Tori was laying on that table about to get the news. Is there anything that you would tell her?
I think I would have said to her, it's something great will come of it. It's not the end of the world. Just be diligent about your care, do your homework. And that's kind of what I did. I mean, I was diligent about doing research because a lot of what they were telling you, it's now I get it. Like if you ever watch a television show where someone goes through cancer and it actually every show I've seen was accurate. Like they use terms that I remembered. So yeah, doing your homework and obviously ask for help if you need it, and you have, you know your support base. Luckily, I was able to do all that. Geez, that
just kind of stay the course.
Stay the course. I mean, you don't really have a choice but try to stay the course. But everyone, you know, but that can mean something different to someone.
But you do have a choice. You do. I mean, whether you made the choices like on purpose or not, mm-hmm. you made the choices.
Yes.
I mean, a lot of people could face that quite differently.
That's true. And I guess just it wrecks them. It wrecks them. It wrecks their mentality. Mm-hmm. They can't function. I get it. You're probably in crisis mode. It might stop you in your tracks. It's totally possible. And I'd hate for that to, I couldn't imagine that you seem paralyzed with just that something's wrong, let alone having to do more tests and go all the way through it. I couldn't imagine.
No, you did amazing things. You made the choices that were right for you. And I don't, earlier on, you kind of dismissed the level of cancer that you had, or I think it's just, it's just as, you know, like it's something you face and you overcame adversity, like a large one that a lot of people don't have to face. So give yourself a lot of credit for what you've gone through, one, but where you're going next. I think that's the cool part.
No, thank you. I think I try to be humble about it, but luckily I had great care and I was able to come away out of that whole debacle with no debt because the insurance I had at the time was really awesome. And I didn't know that at the time.
Keep your job and keep your insurance. Not right now, but when you get that information.
Yes. When I had that job, I honestly didn't know it would come like that, but I was lucky that it did. Cause that's the other thing about getting sick. You face a mountain of bills that are in, or that seem insurmountable because it's another discussion, but it's the healthcare here. So,
yeah, I think, you know, I talk to other people about, you know, similar situations or, you know, tragic pivotal moments in their lives, myself included. Is there a part of you that is, it's a tough word to use, but grateful for the experience that you went through?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't want to go through it again within my power, but I think it gave me something very, very priceless. So, for that, I am grateful because it doesn't have to be cancer. I'm sure, you know, in your life, you can definitely name the very unfortunate occurrence that led to a lot of learning. And I think for other people too, it depends on everyone's experiences, but there probably to some degree is something that that's happened to most people that is, while negative at the time or undesirable, can put them in a better place. But that does depend on your attitude and how you view. It may not turn out like that if you have a certain viewpoint, because your attitude's everything, right?
I agree. Yeah, I'm grateful for what I've learned from the experiences that I've had. And sometimes I think the hardest experiences in my life I've learned the most from. So I'm assuming that
absolutely
the most from yours.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, I appreciate that you took the time to share your story on the Life Shift podcast. It's so important. I hope that the right ears are hearing this episode right now and know that they can make the decisions that feel right for themselves and kind of go on that path and do the things after.
Yes.
That once you've gone through all the medical decisions, you can do all the things that you want to do after.
Well, I appreciate being invited on. It's been such a fun experience. Thank you so much.
Thanks again. And for all of you listening, we will have a new episode next week and we'll see you then. Thanks. For more information, please visit www.thelifeshiftpodcast.com.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.